Welcome everybody to Hast du mal einen Netblock? Though it's in English, it's quite difficult to translate, I think. But as you might know, Berlin has a rather long history in the unauthorized reuse of unused housing space. So tonight, Nibbler is going to tell us about its digital analogy, unused IP addresses owned by government or organizations or big companies. And I think we'll hear a lot about practical and creative reuse of these address spaces, yes? Please welcome Nibbler.
First of all of you who are eager to see a technically sophisticated talk, this will be utterly boring because it's mainly about bureaucracy. It's about the bureaucracy you encounter when you're handling resources on the internet. It's still an interesting subject, though, because only few people look at it because they take it as granted. So to make things clear, we're going to talk about the allocation of internet resources, which is mainly IP addresses and AS numbers. So IP addresses, I guess everybody of you is familiar with that. AS numbers, maybe something less of you have heard of or handled with. It's on the internet, systems connect. It's network systems that are autonomous. They are called AS, and they get a number assigned, and they can have traffic relations, so either they exchange traffic mutually or just in one way. So it's one of the basic resources you need on the internet to act with other players. You need one of these numbers. So how do these get distributed? And if we go back far to the early times of the internet, they were mainly, just assigned and scribbled down on paper, and nobody really had the full insight into it once it grew larger and larger and constantly more problematic to take care of, because the more the internet grows, the more people you need to handle these resources, and you have to define a system how to do so. And of course, such a system also has to represent. Sorry? Bisschen lauter? Okay. And you had also to design policies how to hand out these resources because, they are scarce. So the people have found it in. Regional internet registries. So for every part of the planet, there is a regional internet registry handing out these resources. These resources get handed from the IANA, the International Organization for Doing Just This, Distributing Numbers, to the RERs, gives them large chunks of IP space, of AS number ranges, and they hand it out to people on the internet. So they are non-profit organizations, they are funded by membership fees, and they have to implement policies. This is an important point. They do not make up policies. They do not say, okay, we are in the opinion that these people should get AS numbers and these don't. It's a community-driven process. So, for example, in the RIBE region, policies are consensus-based. They have an elaborate system of discussion, and it's luckily more fruitful than, for example, Wikipedia. So they actually reach a consensus on something, and it mainly is representing the opinion of the people in the certain area of that regional internet registry. From a technical point of view, of course, they hand out the resources and they provide additional services which are not the core purpose of, but are quite nice to have. As I said, it's about bureaucracy. The RIBE NCC, who is handing out the resources to the members in the RIBE region, who, again, make the policies, is a bureaucratic entity. It's not a policymaker. They just adhere to what the people told them. And they do have three major goals, which are important for the allocation of resources. It's aggregation, conservation, and registration. These are also the things you will receive as guidelines if you are a member of that regional internet registry and have to hand out resources yourselves. They also they do trainings. They put out test traffic measurement boxes to map internet latency, have the routing information service. I will come back on that later. And they operate several instances of DNS root servers. One of their services is the routing information service, where you can enter a resource like an AS number or a network, and you get these nice charts where you see this is for the Congress AS. You see the distribution of upstreams. So yeah, I guess it's pretty self-explaining. One of the problems, however, they have to handle is the growth of the routing table. That's why one of the goals is aggregation. So, sorry, dazu oder? Okay. Das better. Das aggregation. Maybe I just repeat the important things. The regional internet registries who hand out through their members or directly internet resources to people on the internet have mainly, for Europe, it's these two goals, aggregation, conservation, and registration. Aggregation means that they have to take care that they hand out as many IP addresses as needed to cater for 2 years currently. And for the future, so people do not re-request resources every time they need a new net block, so they can announce a larger net block, which they will use up after 2 years, instead of requesting monthly net blocks. So, yeah. They do have the routing information service, where you can ask, okay, who is currently using this resource? They tell you by logging the BGP table and the updates, they can tell you, okay, this AS number is advertising this prefix, thus this entity is using this IP range. Of course, the third goal is the conservation, so they have to take care that as many internet resources as possible remain still freely available, because once they are gone, they're gone. What will be interesting for us later on is the WHOIS service. The WHOIS service was introduced to make it easier to find out which IP and which resource belongs to whom. It's a database operated by the RERs. For domains, it's the network information centers of the respective countries or the entities that are maintaining the GTLD. But that's not of interest for us. The RIR databases are the places where you find which IP address belongs to whom, which AS number belongs to whom, and therefore they use a database system that can have several objects. One is the INETNUM object, for example, which is for IP addresses. I will come to that later. The important thing is, well, the stuff we will talk about is in these WHOIS databases. For example, a prison object looks like this. You just have these fields. Some of them are searchable keys. The primary key in that case is the NIC HDL line. It's HORN-RIPE. That's the unique identifier for that object. And yeah, basically that's a record that points to a person in real life that has an address. For the autonomous systems, you have the AutNum object. The AutNum object is more sophisticated, as it's designed to represent a routing policy. So that's the place where I say, I am the AS 250 and I do peer with these people and receive prefixes from them. They are advertising, and I receive, in the case of, for example, in Berlin, I accept any. And yeah. That's the policy you point into the direction where you are receiving upstream from, because you do want to receive all the prefixes from them. And for peerings, you just exchange your own routes. You can also specify routes really in the INETNUM object. For example, if you are advertising just a default route to a customer,
This is a root object. It is the correlation between the AS number that may advertise this root and the IP space. So this is the point where people can have a look and filter. For example, if you are peering with some entity on the internet and they are sending you prefixes, you somehow have to have a look, is this legit? Are these prefixes, is this coherent? And through these root objects, this correlation is mapped. So if you receive roots over a peering that do not have the corresponding root objects, there may be something fishy going on. And these, again, are protected by maintainer objects. That's MNTP, MNT byline. That's an object that roughly looks like this. It has several or one authentication parameter and specifies the protection on that object. So I can put that object into the database, and only if I may put it there, it will eventually appear. So there is some authorization going on. An INETNOW object, well, it's a bunch of IP addresses, I guess. Many of you have seen that. It's also protected by maintainers and also has, for example, the changed lines where you can see when a change has occurred. These changed lines, however, are not enforced by the database, but you can put them into the email and you should, well, stick to the obvious data format. So there is no checking going on, or at least few checking. If you change the history, you can insert lines. It's not really protected, unfortunately. These are INETNOW objects too. And the main difference here is that these are provider independent. It's resources that are directly handed out to internet users, whilst the PA networks are networks that have been assigned to members of these RIRs. So for example, your ISP, you're having your service co-located at, is an LAR, a local internet registry. They receive a large chunk of addresses from the RIPE, and they may hand out smaller fractions of that to their customers, which is also hierarchically protected by the maintainers. So yeah, that's the distribution scheme. Yeah, I've talked about securing resources. About 6-7 years ago, I was curious about that because I had a look at it and it just didn't feel right that there are people putting things into a database publicly readable and you can edit things. Back then, it was more trust-based, so to say. They also had the authorization scheme email from, where the object you had to modify, you just needed to adjust the email address. There are, of course, mechanisms to prevent or to at least to notify people when changes are going on. You can put a notify line into your object. So when somebody notifies, changes that object, an email is sent out to that email address. But that obviously does not give direct, you just see it if it's too late. And in that particular case, is one I stumbled across when I tried to query the RIPE database for all the maintainer objects, which luckily these days is no longer possible as they have access restriction limits. You can just query a certain number of objects during a certain time to prevent that, and to prevent also the harvesting of addresses by just getting the person objects. I ran the list of all these crypt passwords through John, and I wasn't really expecting much because, I mean, if somebody chooses to protect his object, he at least should pick a clever password. But for the first minute, it just crawled, and this particular one I picked out because it was just to have a look for yourself. The crypt PW is the right one. Luckily, this one has changed. Because RIPE has started to deprecate these crypt passwords, and you get these lines inserted, so it's no longer working, but still it's rather good off. The correct way to do it is either use PGP keys to authenticate against the right database, which you do by sending an email, which is PGP encrypted, and all the changes in there are then authorized by your maintainer. That was roughly the distribution when I had the look at the database and facepalmed. We've covered that. Okay, so what happens if you accidentally lock yourself out of your maintainer object, or if the guy who was running that in your company left? There are plenty of good reasons to be able to recover it. So you have to apply for recovery with your local, with your regional internet registry, and they will do what they have to do to make sure that you are the person who is requesting this. They do so by asking for passports for various things. They are quite, they just have to take care that beyond reasonable doubt, you are the person that is the right one to request a certain change. They have deprecated insecure authentication schemes in the past, and have done so automatically. So you received an email, you had some insecurity going on your resources, and have a look here how to care for better protection. However, even after that, if you had a look at how many people then realized that there is a problem and changed their object, you still will find many objects having this notice in there, where just the people who maintained that did not care, and did not care to change it, and did not care to perhaps not use an MD5 password because that will, but use BDP. Then, of course, you have the problem that once you establish these regional internet registries, you already do have IP assets out there which have been converted from paper to some files to even more of that. So you have a certain legacy, and you will find this mostly in the so-called swamp space. It's 192 dot etc. And they have tried to import the information they had into the WHOIS database to make it easier for people to use all these new features, because, well, the larger the internet gets, the more people filter their BGP peers, which is a cool thing. So somehow the people had to handle their resources and document it properly. So that's what you find in there. If you, however, have organizations that totally do not care about what internet resources they have, which have absolutely no idea about the IPs they are using, that they do have this entry in the database, or, yeah. So there are many, many orphaned objects out there, and regarding the allocation policy these days, where you can easily can no longer easily get large objects. You cannot request like a /16 for some small ISP. They will ask you, how are you going to use these IP addresses? You know, we don't have any that much of them. Take as many as you need, but for the next 2 years. So obviously the objects from back then are interesting because it's large chunks of IP space. And in 2004 was some evening at my employer back then. I worked for them, helping them become a larger ISP and introduce BGP, etc., and move into an own data center eventually in some years. So I was sitting in front of the database, and a friend of mine from Belgium, we're talking about AS numbers and about low AS numbers, and one word gave the other saying, yeah, there are still these orphaned objects, but nobody will give them away. And he told me, well, did you ask them? And I decided, okay, good, you got a point. And I went out to ask them. So I started with AS1 and worked my way through to AS, I guess, 3D8 or so, which I was did not have the luck as they still needed it. And then came across this one. Okay, 248. No, 248, sounds great. I had a look at the clock and decided that it's a good time to call there. It was in the US. And asked him about this particular object. Well, do you need this AS number? I mean, do you know what I'm talking about, this AS number you're having in this database? Oh, yeah, that's quite some time ago. It was in the 80s. Yeah, I was in Germany, and I was working for, have a look for yourself. And I said, well, do you just need that one, or do you need all four? Which is a question I instinctively replied with, yes, sure. And I did not believe it because, well, okay, he's obviously not sure what he's having there, but he promised me to forward me the email from RIPE NCC to recover the assets and was generally fine with it. Now, this is the email I got on that very day, with the passwords for all the four AS numbers or the maintainers on these. Now you may ask if that's a bad thing because current policy says that every resource has to be allocated for a certain purpose and a certain person, but once that changes, it has to be re-evaluated and it's no longer valid practically. It's a policy the community has come up with and it serves the purpose. But these objects particularly are pre-RIPE, so they are not governed by the policy, and a recent policy decision in the last minute, they decided somehow that, these objects better be not part of any policy still. So not to change that policy, that these pre-policy objects are, that's bureaucratic. Obviously, that was rather easy. So there were also some other objects I was having a look at, and I recalled maintainer objects I still had the passwords for because, well, people did not change anything, and I was always tempted to take certain large address blocks when some years ago a phenomenon started that really startled me. Somebody else was having a look at these objects and we're changing small pieces of it, I will show you later, and over the years these objects mutated to something entirely different, used by somebody entirely different, protected by maintainers that were quite new, and one of these cases is a company that has their headquarters in some Bavarian village next to where I used to live a few years ago. So this totally made no sense that they had a number of /16s. It's not all in that object. They have some more assets. This is one of the I frequently make database snapshots to monitor such activity, and this is one of the earliest. It's American Express Europe Limited. Okay, well, they have a /16. It's a bank. It's okay. And it's protected by the RIPE NCC non-maintainer, which was introduced to solve the problem that some people have chosen to just say auth none, which is not so good a thing. So this object was basically protected. So somebody who had to apply for it had to, beyond reasonable doubt, certify that he is American Express Europe Limited. And somebody chose to do so. And I still am not really sure how they did it, but judging from the objects, they simply impersonated these corporations, as nobody cared, as in some cases the corporation even doesn't exist any longer. So they basically committed a crime there, which I luckily didn't, and it took me a while to also distinguish this. And in the meanwhile, these objects were mutating even further from American Express Europe Limited to AEE Europe Limited, which I found in the company's register, and it has been registered 2003. So if you have a look at the change history, they just did it. Yeah, they seemingly had some time. So they did not make all the changes at once, but over the last years, knowing that this asset is a very, very expensive one in like 10 years or so, when there are no IPv4 addresses anymore, they sit on a stockpile of pre-owned resources. However, yeah. Yeah, you can have a look for yourself. The maintainer is mp-mnt. I've done so far. This is a particularly interesting set for they do have their backbone network, which used to be an engineering GmbH, which is no longer existing. It's an old German postal code. Over here. Oh, they still do exist. The Bayerische Landesanstalt für Aufbaufinanzierung is now System 4. Whatever. So, that's one of the domains they use. One of the in the past, when checks were not that easy to circumvent, it or for some objects it was enough that you had the right email address. So, for example, if you find an object in the database which points to an email address. That points to a domain which is no longer existent. You can register that domain and let them send you the stuff. And hopefully, it's not that easy like this anymore. So I feel quite okay about talking about it, as the major problems luckily have been solved. So yeah. And you will find IP addresses that belong to IGEPA, which is a paper company. So IGRZ may be related to their data center or something like that. Yeah, that's about it. So I would like to go over to the question section, because I guess there will be quite a number of these. Yeah, hit me.
So if you have a question, please line up here behind the microphone.
Hallo.
Test. Did you inform the RIPE NCC about this? And if yes, what did they say?
The problem is that informing RIPE NCC about it doesn't cut it, as they just do what the community tells them. I frequently speak with members of this community. I myself am attending occasionally RIPE meetings. And it's really indeed a problem of the awareness of the people that can actually change a policy to preventing things like this. So imagine you have to convince people who do work for major carriers, for whomever you like, which represent their RIPE member at the RIPE meetings, and they do have to tell RIPE what to do. As RIPE NCC, the people who sit in Amsterdam, they are not in charge of deciding. They just have to adhere to the policy.
That's true, but it would be pretty trivial to just put up a vote at the next RIPE meeting, at the general meetings, which happens twice a year. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty certain that every member would vote against these practices.
Well, the question is how to change these without causing problems for the rest of the infrastructure. So one thing that is already going on is the certification of routing resources, for example. So there are processes that drive into the right direction, but as with all consensus-based things, it's pretty, it's not the fastest process to change things, which is a good thing, but yeah.
Okay, to rephrase, are you actively pursuing this or aren't you?
Currently I'm not, as I'm too busy, but I'm trying to keep people aware.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Did you only do this on RIPE address space, or did you also explore whether there were similar problems elsewhere?
Elsewhere it's far worse, I would think, because in the US they do not have a routing registry that is maintained by the regional internet registry. The regional internet registry mandates their members to keep an RWA server around themselves to give answers to which IP belongs to whom. That obviously does not really work, as if anybody of you ever had tried to get a RWA server running, it's not the first service you would think about if you had to put up a list, okay, what services do you need to run our ISP. So the RIPE database is a bit special also due to the history, as RIPE was one of the earlier regional internet registries. They inherited a lot from ARIN and a lot of these legacy resources. It's a bit the same for Asia and especially Africa, but that's a different thing than this split.
Any more questions? Doesn't seem so. So okay. Thanks again, Nibbler.
Thanks.